Welcome to Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we explore brand manufacturing in the digital age. Hey everyone, and welcome to the very special Thanksgiving episode of Unpacking the Digital Shelf, where we are going to drop some gratitude for what we think are some of the coolest, best, most significant events in digital commerce in the past year. So in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I am grateful to have all three of the founding members of the Institute on to give commerce-based thanks. Rob Gonzalez is here in the studio as always. Hey, Rob.
Hello.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Molly Schoenthal from New York. Happy Thanksgiving, Molly. Gobble, gobble.
Happy Thanksgiving, Peter.
And Justin's in his home studio in Baltimore. Hey, Justin. Gobble, gobble.
Happy Thanksgiving. It's also my favorite holiday, Peter, as well.
Oh, that's awesome. It really is. So let's dig right in then with the thankfulness. Rob, I want to start with you. What tops your gratitude list in commerce?
Well, for me, my wife and I, we both work, we're both busy. We don't have time to go to the grocery store, even though we enjoy going from time to time. So we do a lot of our shopping online. And I'll say that I'm thankful for the Instacart shoppers. That seems to me like a tough job. My wife orders a lot of food that nobody recognizes. It's the type of stuff that
like
you get
what?
Up to the checkout aisle and you're like, what is that vegetable? I don't know.
and the woman at the, or the man at the checkout thing is like searching through the book, trying to find the code for that particular thing.
And like my wife lived in China. She speaks Mandarin. She speaks French. So the stuff that she picks up in the store is just
right? Totally married up.
Well, true
that'll,
story.
That'll this. Be another episode, folks.
Also thankful for marrying up. But the Instacart shoppers, those poor people that are picking our orders,
yeah,
and then delivering them to our building. I'm really thankful that they exist. It just makes our life better, and it's a tough job, so I appreciate it.
I have never had a problem with any order done through Instacart shopping or any of those kind of services. I've been super lucky. Yeah, I think it's a great process. That's awesome. Molly, how about you?
I am thankful for the Wish app. Have you guys seen the Wish app?
No.
Wish app.
Okay, so it is an e-commerce app that offers super deeply discounted stuff from China, essentially, ranging from a bucket of worms for $2 to $180 designer bag knockoff for $18. This thing gets half a million reviews a day. Its last funding round, it was valued at $8.7 billion. Wow. It follows this mall metaphor where you kind of swipe through and you look at, you know, from random thing to random thing. And I just bought our Halloween costumes for $8 and $10 respectively. I'm going to be Pikachu. all due to this new model of commerce, which is sort of like the discount shopping, but over an app.
I'm listening to the Macklemore thrift store in my head right now as you're talking about this.
It's amazing.
It was 99 cents.
And you kind of just want to see what's available. Like you just, you know, what other weird thing are they going to offer me? You know, salad bowls, ramen, hoodie sweatshirts. It's the craziest thing.
So you know we're going to have to post a picture of you as Pikachu on our show page. Now that you've mentioned you're going to be Pikachu.
I mean, if you must.
Well, tell me, how do you feel when you're going through the Wish app? Do you have concerns about
fraud?
Fraud. Or I mean, how do you make yourself feel comfortable? Is it because it's only $8, so who cares? Or
absolutely. So I use PayPal.
Okay.
And, you know, at this point in time, my credit card is down for so many things that I've signed up for. It's just another risk to add to the book. But this idea of almost like a bazaar or a flea market or this heavily discounted, highly random curated shopping experience available to you is pretty amazing. And the other thing is that, you know, we're so used to Amazon delivering to us within 24 hours or 48 hours. On the Wish app, your thing could get there in 3 days or like in 3 weeks. And that doesn't seem to stop them.
And do you know at the time whether it's going to be 3 days or 3 weeks, or is it just like...
Not really. Okay. So they give you an estimate, or for Halloween costumes, it'll say like, arrives before Halloween. And then your estimated time of delivery will be like November 5th.
It sounds like
kind of feels like a shopping roulette.
It's totally like that. And it's totally flies in the face of everything that we preach about, which is like accuracy, integrity. Like, you know exactly what you're going to get. You know exactly when you're going to get it. You know that your data is being handled responsibly. It's shopping roulette, really, and people love it. And I gotta admit, I love it too.
There's other major stores that have that same philosophy. Like TJ Maxx, I think, intentionally doesn't super organize their racks because they want people to hunt. And Costco, a big part of the Costco rush is you go in there and you never know what they're gonna have, what's gonna be on sale this week, right? So I think there's something very human about that.
Or like Trader Joe's. I mean, even though we're not worried about our information at Trader Joe's, there is this sense that you're on the hunt
the delight,
for something special and quirky.
Yeah, the delight of discovery. All right, Justin, wishes are over. What do you have for Thanksgiving?
You know, based on that last one, though, Molly, I'm going to create an app called Hope, because it feels like that app should have been called Hope. Like, I hope it arrives. I hope what I get is. So as usual, you guys get to talk about all these cool things like Instacart and Wish. And my thankful note here is something very, very boring. So guys, how much do you guys know about ERPs?
I know they exist and that companies find them very useful.
Good. I know that when I'm in a conversation and someone says ERP, I run.
Conversation, right?
ERP is also the sound I make when I've eaten too much at Thanksgiving dinner.
So the ERP, in my world of B2B, I mean, the ERP is the lifeblood of the entire company, right? And I am thankful today for companies that are actually starting to rethink how ERP works in relation to digital. I think it's really cool. So here's a question for you guys. How long do you guys think it takes for an employee of a manufacturer on average to learn the ERP? Like how many days is the average employee able to be trained on an ERP?
Well, the CIA says that you can go from zero to fluent in Spanish in like 3 or 4 months with total immersion. So I'm going to say 4 months.
You got 90 days, 90 to 100, 120. Got it. How about you, Peter?
Wow. Software is hard. So I've got to kind of chime in with Rob. I think it's not days. I'm thinking it's months. So I'll say, just like on The Price is Right, I'll top Rob. I'll say 4 months.
In one day.
In one day.
Molly?
Yeah, I'm
thankful for Peter.
6 months.
6 months from Molly.
So it was a trick question. It's not in days. It's actually 12 months.
Oh, my God.
On average. Not to learn the business. Not to learn the business. To learn the ERP. Like when you do an order, you have to hit Shift F7C to do this kind of order. But in this order, you hit Shift F7F4. I mean, that's literally what the ERP is. And what I'm most thankful. So I keynoted an event yesterday. And in this event, there was amazing conversations happening about how companies are now starting to rethink their ERP because the ERP, it takes so long to learn. They're starting to abstract it or build apps on top of the ERP, like ordering apps and customer service apps. And in our digital world, why I'm most thankful for it is it's starting to allow for better integration with this lifeblood of our company. So I am thankful today for companies starting to rethink the ERP. My boring topic for you today.
That is so inspiring. No, I mean, it's that is as you said, the lifeblood, and a lot of that software is coming from a prior generation, and it hasn't really done that transformation to the kinds of things we talk about to be able to work at the speed of commerce today, right?
And look, the ERP, I mean, the ERP does what it does well, right? Supply chain, warehouse management, and all that, right? General ledger. But it was never built for this transactional age that we're in. And so to have, those changes start to happen, I think is pretty amazing.
So I'm going to go back. I'm going to follow on this lifeblood theme here and say, I'm also thankful for the Amazon warehouse workers that make all of my ridiculous one item purchases possible. We got a, Molly and I were on a Amazon fulfillment center tour a few months ago. And one of the things that we witnessed was the packing. So there was a woman sitting or standing on a platform, and it was like box, shape, tape, pack, go, box, shape. I mean, it was just boom, 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 boom. It's hard to imagine a human being. It's like watching a precision athlete, right, for hours at a time do something at high speed and high precision. It was really, really impressive.
Now, why aren't robots doing something like that? Did you get a sense while you were there?
Oh, yeah. There's a bunch of tasks that robots are just bad at. So if you think about Amazon's assortment, Amazon sells like literally hundreds of millions of different products that are all different shapes and sizes and have different like tensile strength in which like you would squeeze the thing and break it. And like there's just so much variation in them that training a machine to be able to pick up every single different shape of product and fragility of product and, you know, treat it. And like, there's just so much judgment that goes into that, that it's just a problem that we're not close to solving from robotics.
Cool. Yeah, it's funny because, you know, Amazon talks about all the automation that they have at their fulfillment centers. And we know that in China, they have these quote unquote fully automated or people-less fulfillment centers. But when you walk into a facility like we did in New Jersey, there's a lot of people there, and the robot areas are kind of fenced off, like with these big chain link fences so that they don't run over people.
They protecting the people from the robots or the robots from the people?
It's a fail safe from when Skynet finally launches, exactly. Right? The only thing holding them back will be the chain link fences.
So, wow, Rob has given two like very human empathy centered Thanksgiving things. The That's holiday right. must do something miraculous to
it's,
you.
I'm like the Grinch. Yeah, three sizes bigger around Thanksgiving.
That is impressive. All right, Molly, what do you got?
So I'm also thankful for, have you guys heard of, so I'm going to go down sort of weird things that you can get online. Rob, I don't know, a month ago sent us this article about exotic meat being offered on Facebook marketplaces. Do you remember this?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So evidently there are these marketplace groups on Facebook that are centered around the discovery and sale of rare cuts of meat. I think the example they gave was like Spanish octopus. And these groups also extend to whiskeys that you can only get in certain parts of the U.S.
You gotta
or other
have whiskey
countries.
With your Spanish
so
octopus.
I'm grateful to the internet for the democratization of the long tail and like weirdo interests like rare meat and rare whiskey and, you know, all of the things that I can now get through a global community of other weirdos who like this stuff.
Yeah, we were talking with an Amazon expert, someone who had founded, really been in on the beginning of Amazon Marketplace the other day. And he was talking about how one of the amazing things that he experienced while watching the growth of the marketplace was just how some random person who had this specialty in something could end up standing up a $2 million business practically overnight, because Amazon is the search engine where you can find stuff. And so I think that capability to, as you said, expose the long tail to the entire globe is really transformative.
And peer-to-peer selling, I think, is a rising force. So we see it now with influencer stores. I think influencer stores were in China a couple of years before they launched in the U.S. Oh, Instagram influencer stores. But this idea of these connected networks of people who can do business with each other, I think will be coming more frequent and more scalable.
Yeah, I'm a big believer, actually, in the speaking of connecting peer-to-peer, in the rise of Shopify and millions of direct-to-consumer brands. Mm-hmm. Toby The CEO, founder of Shopify, keynoted the Underscore VC conference in Boston a few weeks ago. And just hearing the types of businesses and types of people that show up on Shopify is pretty inspiring. And I actually, after that, I went through my own spending for 2019, and more than 50% of my online spending is direct from brands. It's not actually not through retailers. And so some of my favorites are, like, there's a new one for this fall that was in a list of, you know, up and coming Shopify sites and new Shopify brands called House, which is like a American liqueur Amaro producer out in California. It's a husband wife company.
How do you spell that?
HAUS.
Okay.
And so I ordered a couple bottles and it's excellent. It's like the most refreshing stuff ever. And
you're going to have it at your Thanksgiving table.
Yeah. And this is just one of, like, literally dozens of different sites that I go to buy direct from brands. So that the long tail is real. It's good, especially good for nerds like me that don't necessarily fit into the mainstream.
All right, Justin, bring us back to earth now with your next.
Where
do you get your Spanish octopus, Justin?
I will admit that I do like different cuts of meats, and I perhaps have perused Facebook groups that sell such things.
Aha! I knew there'd be one of us.
just perhaps, hypothetically speaking.
You know someone. You have a friend of a friend who might have bought some venison from Virginia.
It brings up an interesting thing that I was just talking to a couple of people about, because, like, we get a struggle to tell, like, what people, like, what you do, your family members, like, what you do for a living. Is that a struggle for you guys? Like, this is to explain your job to someone is really difficult, I think, right?
My family gave up.
I made candy.
That's right. So now I've basically just told people, like, I help companies sell their stuff online. And my mom, I always have to tell my mom, like, all the things I don't sell online, like all the bad things I don't help companies sell online.
You carve out the sin exceptions.
My thankfulness, but yeah. My next thankfulness is, again, kind of bringing it back to the boring, but thank you to Amazon Business. I've had so many conversations with companies where we're trying to convince them, hey, this is why you should be doing things online. This is why you should be investing. This is why you need people. And all those reasons are great. But then whenever I talk about Amazon Business, their ears perk up and they're like, wait, $10 billion? Amazon Business did $10 billion. So we actually need someone like Amazon Business in the B2B world to prove out to companies, because there are still people out there saying that people buy from people, not from machines. And Amazon Business is helping kind of drive this message, just like they did in the retail side. But believe it or not, we still have to have those conversations. So I'm thankful for Amazon Business for continuing to push my message and our message about why digital is important.
Yeah, and they probably, I've found that they look at those distributors and manufacturers look at it in two ways. One, with fear, like, are they going to take over my business, which is a motivator, we all know. And then secondly, with, wow, how could I use that to also be part of the way I make money. It's worked on both sides. And I agree with you. I mean, when we were at B2B Next conference, I totally noticed the shift in the market, and it felt like that Amazon was sort of the impetus of forcing that shift in thinking, even if Amazon didn't affect their category, you know, so it was useful in that way.
There was a big article this week in B2B EC News about Georgia Pacific selling on Amazon Business and being able to sell, and they're really kind of pushing to the Amazon Business world. And there haven't been a lot of companies that have talked about their Amazon Business strategy. So to have a large company like Georgia Pacific do it, again, just kind of giving credence, kind of pushing this ball down the hill, I think is important.
All right, Rob, the gratitude merry-go-round swings back to you. What do you got?
I am the last merry-go-round to be grateful for something.
I don't know how merry you are, but go for it.
You know, honest, so I'm going to – I did two people-oriented thank yous. I'm going to end with a market-oriented thank you. And it's related to the stuff that Molly was saying about how the internet sort of allows us all to be our own kind of special kind of freak. is when I was a kid, I was growing up in the UK and I liked Warhammer 40,000. There are these little pewter miniatures that you would paint, and there was a whole strategy game where you would actually build the tabletop with hills and trees and fortification that your troops could hide behind and stuff like that. And I absolutely love that game. And when I came back to the US, it did not exist. There was one comic book store 2 hours away that sold anything having to do with Warhammer. And there was nobody did it, right? Like nobody played the game. It just wasn't a thing. And nowadays, so I had to give it up, right? And nowadays, you never have to give it up. Nowadays, if you love something, if you find something that is you, you can find your people and you could find your tribe and you can keep doing the thing that you love. And that wasn't, you know, that's a generational change. That's not something that was true 25 years ago. It is true now. And I'm just so happy about that every day. I mean, there's so many little things that I appreciate in my day that are just not mainstream, that are me. And that's a good thing in terms of what the internet has allowed.
Yeah, and when it comes to being thankful for tribes, I'm actually super grateful for the tribe that we're creating here. You know, when I talk to executives and the people on their teams that are creating this new world of brand manufacturers, they are super courageous and really scrappy, no matter the size of the company that they work at. And they are leading their organizations in this change. And that's a really difficult place to play in sometimes. Because resistance to change, internal politics, it's not all figured out. So there's not a great roadmap. So you can't necessarily point to KPIs that are set. And that's a really uncomfortable place in companies that are used to more stable businesses. So I'm grateful for that and for that. Hopefully this Digital Shelf Institute coming together to bring all those people together. So you can stop the music now, Sean. But that's my gratitude for you guys and for this whole community that we're building together.
I feel like we need to balance out this episode with like a episode of things that we really hate. Next time.
All right, I'm going to look for the next holiday opportunity to have our hate podcast. Okay. So with that schmaltzy gratitude, that is our show for today. Please follow us on the Institute LinkedIn page. We'd be super grateful. Tweet at us, Win Digital Shelf. And if our content is useful, please leave a review wherever you get your podcast and share it with your colleagues. We're thankful you are part of our community.